The morning of today's daf Baba Basra is Lamed Beis. We are on the bottom of Lamed Alpha Mud Beis, continuation of yesterday's daf, where the Gemara was talking about Zilus of the Beis Dina, whether or not we're worried about the degradation of Beis Din. Beis Din makes a decision, Beis Din is going to have to flip-flop on their decision, so it's going to be demeaning to Beis Din, demoralizing, and Beis Din obviously needs to show a certain amount of stability, integrity, and so Beis Din should not overturn a decision. Now, obviously, I mean, if you have new information, and the new information seems to indicate another direction, so obviously, it's important to note mistakes that were made based on the insufficient information that you were given. But the context really of this discussion is where basically you were given more information, but really not enough information, meaning certainly not enough to overturn a decision. And Zilus de Beis Din is obviously a consideration, something to take into consideration in terms of whether or not Beis Din should, in fact, overturn the decision. Had this discussion come up yesterday based on an incident involving Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman was presiding over a case in the Beis Din where you had two people who were competing over the ownership of a particular property, and both of them brought in witnesses that said they were the owners. One person brought in witnesses that said that he was there for the Shnei Chazaka for 3 years of unchallenged occupancy, and the other brought in also witnesses for Shnei Chazaka for unchallenged occupancy, plus his witnesses also said that his father owned the property as well. So Rav Nachman said that the person who brought in the witnesses with the occupancy and father's ownership obviously has a stronger claim to the land, and so therefore Rav Nachman awarded to that litigant. And then at a later point in time, the other litigant brought in witnesses that his father also owned the land as well. So now basically with this new information that was introduced to Rav Nachman's court, so Rav Nachman said, okay, let's go back to the indeterminate state, because basically we have now a stalemate between the two litigants and the two witnesses that they're bringing, and the witnesses that they were bringing. So that, and so Rav Nachman basically, after having ruled that it should be awarded to one party with the new information that was provided, wanted to bring it back to its indeterminate state, and Rav Nachman wanted to reverse his decision, to which he was advised by colleagues of his, no, don't do that. Don't overturn your decision. You don't really have a lot more information. You only have a little bit more information. You already issued a ruling, and if you now flip-flop on your decision, so we're worried about Zilus de Beis Din, people are going to call into question the integrity of Beis Din if you start flip-flopping. Nobody likes a flip-flopper. So so Rav Nachman at first thought about it some more. We quoted yesterday a Mishnah in a Mishnah in Ksuvos, where the Mishnah... It's in Yevamos. Okay, it's quoting Ksuvos. It's in Yevamos. Anyway, it's indicated that Mishnah in Ksuvos that we saw yesterday, that once Beis Din renders a decision, unless you're given an overwhelming amount of new information, you should not reverse your decision. And then Rav Nachman said, "Oh, you know what? That's a good point. I really shouldn't reverse my decision." And then how did the story end up? Rav Nachman reversed his decision. And now what we continue today, where we left off yesterday, is why? Why did Rav Nachman reverse his decision? The Mishnah and Ksuvos that we quoted yesterday certainly gives a good indication that one should not reverse his decision. So the Gemara said, and this is where we're going to pick it up yesterday, Detalya Bashli Ravave, because he suspended his position on strong ropes, meaning there's very strong support to this idea that one should reverse his decision in light of new information. And now let's begin. The Talibash Leravave, it's about 8 lines, 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud, on Lamed Alpha Amud Beis. We are learning together now a Mishnah. This Mishnah isn't found in Ksuvos, and the Mishnah deals with the following discussion. Obviously, a Kohen has certain rights, privileges, responsibilities. So he does the Avoda, he duchens, he blesses the Jewish people, he eats Truma. Okay, there's a lot of rights and privileges that come with being a Kohen. How do we know that the person's a Kohen? So the answer is very simple. He says he's a Kohen. But what if people are challenging or contesting that he's a Kohen? Or, as we'll discuss a little bit later this morning, what if we know his father was a Kohen, but rumors have circulated that mom was a Grusha? And we know that when a Kohen marries a Grusha, the children do not have Kedushas Kahuna. The children are Chalalim. So, and what if rumors start circulating? So that is what we're going to be discussing right now. What do we do in the event that people are questioning, challenging his rights to being a Kohen? Before we continue with this discussion, let's just get some basics down. In terms of rumors, I know we discussed this at length back in Ksuvos. In terms of rumors, rumors generally speaking, we ignore. Rumors don't have halachic validity to it in general. But it's certainly something to take into consideration. I mean, well, we also should take into consideration that none of us should be circulating those rumors. That's what's called Lashon Hara. But aside from that, just in terms of halacha, rumors generally speaking are to be dismissed. If one person is challenging, so as we'll see in the Gemara, that may be something to take into consideration. If two people are challenging, meaning that now we have Edus, that's obviously a bona fide challenge. That's what the Gemara is going to describe as an ear error. With all that in mind, let's now go forward. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Malin. Now remember, the whole point over here, let's not lose the forest because of all these trees. The whole point over here of the Gemara right now is just simply to show that it is precedented, and that's what Rav Nachman is basing himself on, that once you receive new information, so it is within the right of the Beis Din to overturn the decision, and we're not worried about Zilus of the Beis Din. That is the whole point of us going through this entire exercise and this entire Mishnah right now. Let's begin the Mishnah. Dinan Rabbi Yehuda Omer and Malin Likun Al Pi Edachad. Rabbi Yehuda says that we do not elevate a Kohen on the basis of the testimony of one witness. Meaning, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you need two witnesses in order to elevate. Now, again, I go back to my introduction. If we know he's a Kohen, and no one ever challenged him being a Kohen, I don't need two witnesses to step into the court or into the shul and say, hey, he's a Kohen. We all know he's a Kohen. What we're describing right now is somebody who was questioned and challenged regarding his status of being a Kohen. And so what Rabbi Yehuda is teaching us is that once his status is now in question, so now we cannot elevate him based on the testimony of one witness. Rav Elazar says, Amasai, when is this true? Meaning he's not coming to argue with Rav Yehuda, he's just simply explaining the sheet of Rav Yehuda. But Malkum Sheish Arurin, that's only when there is a legitimate challenge. But if there are no challenges, so then you can elevate the coin based on the testimony of one witness. Fine. So we have now Rav Elazar explaining Rav Yehuda that generally speaking, I don't need two witnesses, but if I have Oririn, if I have a legitimate challenge, which we're going to quantify in just a moment, if I have a legitimate challenge, then I need two witnesses to elevate him. Otherwise, one witness would be fine. Rabbi Shimon ben Hasgan, and then the Braisa brings in the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, quoting Rabbi Shimon ben Hasgan, Malin Lakuna, Apid Edechad, that you can elevate a Kohen based on the testimony of one witness. Now, Rashbag Haina Rav Elazar, what do we have over here? A disagreement, but really, seemingly, an agreement. Meaning, what are they both saying? One witness works. There obviously has to be a point of contention between the two, just simply the way the Bryce presents itself. The Bryce is presenting it as if this is two conflicting viewpoints, so there certainly must be some sort of debate. It's just a question of explaining what are they arguing about. And maybe the Gemara says, well, maybe the challenge that came to the Kohen regarding his status is based on the challenge of one individual. So the Gemara says, and the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar Savar Irachad, Rashbag Savar Iratrei, and maybe that's the machlokus between Rav Elazar and the Rashbag, in terms of one witness challenging his status of being a Kohen, where Rav Elazar will tell you that that does qualify as a challenge, and the Rashbag tells you that does not qualify as a challenge, and only the only thing that's a challenge is only when two people testify against him. The Gemara says, but we know that's just simply not true. We're on the very top of Laman Beis Amud Aleph, V'Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Divrei Hakol, Ein Erer Parchos Mishnayim. We know, as a rule, ear error does not come with less than two. Meaning, That's the starting point of this entire discussion. That a bona fide challenge only comes in the event that two witnesses come forward and say that I know we all thought he was a Kohen, but he's not a Kohen. I know he says he's a Kohen, but he's not a Kohen. Then and only then do we have now a formal challenge. And now the Gemara says, and that's not open for discussion. And one witness is not going to be considered a formal ear error. So now that we're starting here, so we have to go back. Now we have to go back to the Braisa, and we have to explain the pshat in the Braisa, the machlokas in the Braisa. Ella ira trei. So over here, what happened is that two people contested as to whether or not, as to the fact that he was not a Kohen. V'hacha b'mayiskina. So the Gemara says, so now over here in our case, in our Braisa, what are we dealing with? So it's a little bit of a drama. Kigon. Here's what happened in our case, and this is what Rav Elazar and the Rashbag are arguing about. We know that this individual was born from a Kohen. We know his father was a Kohen. Wonderful. So now, seemingly, he should have all the enjoyment and benefits of being a Kohen. His father's a Kohen. That's simply how it works. And then rumors start circulating that he is, that despite the fact that his father was a Kohen, but the Kohen married, his father married a divorcee. And so therefore he's a halal. Now, the Rashbam here points out in our Gemara, this part of the Gemara is really unnecessary. And not only unnecessary, but halachically has no significance. Rumors, like I said a moment ago, rumors in halacha have close to no validity. Over here, it has no validity. So just the fact that people are saying that his father married a grusha, that halachically does not have any validity. And the Rashbam points out over here, this part of the story is kind of like an intro. It's not really halachically significant. It just sets us up for the next part of the discussion. Ve'achtina. And so what we do is we're going to demote him. Now again, the Rashbam over here says it's not like a real bona fide demotion, because again, it's rumors. It just simply means we're looking into it. Ve'asa edecha v'amr dekoinhu. So here now, with the introduction of just simply one person coming forward and saying, no, his dad's fine. His dad did not marry a grusha. It's those are rumors, but I am dismissing those rumors. They are not true. So asikne. So now what we're going to do is we're going to elevate him. Okay, based on the one witness. And then after the one witness testified, then two witnesses came over and said, no, dad married a grusha. We were there. We saw it. Dad married a grusha, and as a result of that, they demoted him. Because remember, now what do we have? One witness saying that he's clear, he's all clear. Two witnesses saying that no, he's a chalal. Dad married a grusha, and therefore he's a chalal. So one against two, and halacha, two witnesses is always going to beat the one. Now, here's where the story comes to its conclusion. The asaid echad, now after the two testify that his dad married a grusha, then comes in one witness, va'amar de kohen hu, that the last witness comes and says that he is in fact a kohen, a bona fide legitimate kohen, meaning dad did not marry a grusha. So now where do we stand at the end of the day? It's two against two. Exactly. Udikuli alma mitzarfin edus, and as far as the fact that towards his pedigree of being a kosher Kohen, it's one witness and then one witness. And interjected between the one and the one, you have the two witnesses said that he was no good. And let's assume, says the Gemara, just to have this discussion, that the one and the one can combine with one another despite the fact that they're not coming in at the same time.
Was he already married?
That's irrelevant to this particular discussion. Okay, so the Dekulei Alma Mitzarfin Edus, and let's assume right now that these two witnesses can combine. Okay, V'hacha B'mechash L'Zilusa De'Beidina Kamiflagi. And now, what's that issue over here? So, what's that issue over here is as follows. Again, this is going to be our projected explanation of the Braisa. So that it all takes us back to the point of Rav Nachman. Here's what they're debating. We have one witness who said that he was good. Good. Right? And again, that one witness is just dispelling a rumor. And to dispel a rumor, you could do that with one witness. Fine. And then two witnesses said that he is no good. Okay, so now two against one. So obviously the two is going to beat the one. So now he's no good. Now we have one witness coming in. And again, we're assuming that the one witness can combine with the other witness. But when all said and done, Basin issued a ruling. The ruling is that he's not a Kohen. He does not have Kedushas Kahuna. And now, if we are going to take this last witness into consideration, Beis Din is going to have to overturn the ruling. And the Gemara now is explaining that that is exactly the debate taking place between Rav Elazar and the Rashbag in terms of whether or not Beis Din should overturn the ruling. Rav Elazar came to Achtin Allah Maskin Aleich Hashin Lizilus the Beidina, where Rav Elazar will tell you that look, once we demoted him, so therefore we should not promote him because we're worried about Zilus the Beidina. And I mentioned this yesterday, and I'd like to just reiterate again today. Think about really what Rav Elazar is saying. Meaning, basically, we have an opportunity to take a Kohen who was disbarred, who was removed from his Kedushas Kahuna, and we have an opportunity to elevate him, but because of Zilus of the Beidina, we're basically going to have, we're saying to him, you know, take one for the team. Meaning, it's unfortunate. We have an opportunity to elevate you, but if we're going to keep flip-flopping on a ruling, so then we, the Beis Din, are going to lose our. So it's going to be a stand against us and against our reputation. And as I mentioned yesterday, obviously this idea of Zilus de Beis Din must be such a strong idea because think about what the Gemara now is suggesting in order to maintain and preserve the integrity of the Beis Din. Okay, so. Just to absorb the idea. V'rashbag savor ein achtin anan achtin anan achtine v'anan maskin alei ulezilus de beidin alo cheshinan. And the Rashbag will tell you no. That look, it's true that we demoted him because of the two witnesses who discredited him. But now that that last witness came, and we could take that last witness, and we could be mitzvah if we can combine him with the first witness. So now we have an opportunity to elevate him. And the Rashbam points out over here, what are we talking about? Two witnesses say he's no good. Two witnesses say he's good. Isn't that considered trey u trey? And don't we normally say stalemate? The Rashbam reminds us, yeah, but remember, the starting point of the whole discussion is that we know that his father was a Kohen. So the truth of the matter is that the trey u trey knock each other out. We go back to the original chazaka. The original chazaka is that his father was a Kohen. And therefore, we're going to reinstate him as a Kohen. So where are we right now in the Gemara at this point in time? According to the Rashbag, we are not worried about Zilus de Beis Din. If we're given new information, Beis Din's going to overturn the ruling, which then gave Rav Nachman the fortitude to, on the previous case where we started the whole discussion, gave him the fortitude to say, look, I know that we issued one ruling, but now we were provided with new information, and so based on the new information that's given, so I'm going to, we're going to change our ruling, we're going to flip-flop on a ruling. But again, I don't mean it flippantly. I mean, we're going to do it because the new information, we're going to do it because new information was provided to us. Okay. Adkan. That takes us to the proof that Rav Nachman has given. Now, by the way, keep in mind, the proof that Rav Nachman's given is also interesting because in the Mishnah, the way we just presented it, it's not a shita sakol. It's not everyone's position that you should reverse the ruling, meaning the Rashbab is arguing with Rav Elazar. And in fact, Rav Elazar says not to reverse the ruling. So it's interesting that despite the fact that we have just offered a pshat in this Mishnah, even at this point, It's not everyone's position. Okay, but still, that's what the Gemara says. Ashle Ravave, it's strong shoulders, meaning it's the opinion of Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Yeah.
Don't we say there's a precedent in Dina in the partial cases if somebody's trying to found guilty of murder and new information?
Right, right. So on cases of murder, so we have a mandate of Hitzel Asaida. Meaning the Torah tells us that we should do everything to save the person from being executed. So, but that's a mandate. Over here, we don't have such a mandate. Okay, so that's Maskevul Ravashi Achi My Irya Chada Filu Betray Nami. So Ravashi says, well, if that's true, so let me ask you a simple question: the entirety of the issue over here is whether or not Beis Din should or should not reverse the ruling. So, simple question. Two witnesses came and said that he's no good. So Beis Din said, okay, we have to act on the basis of two witnesses, and they demoted the Kohen. Then the Braisa brought in, what happened after that? One witness came in afterwards. So Ravashi says, you know, if the entire point of the Braisa was Beis Din should or should not reverse the ruling, why do I have one witness coming? Really, what should happen at this point in time? Have two witnesses come in. Because if all I want to do is highlight the question of whether or not Beis Din should or should not reverse the ruling, so make this now a more exciting scenario. And when I say exciting, I mean make it a bigger chiddush. Even if two witnesses come, so Rav Elazar will tell you Beis Din should not reverse the ruling, and the Rashbag will tell you that you should reverse the ruling. Why is it that the Braisa only has one witness coming? Clearly the Braisa wanted to highlight a different point altogether, and that is what the Gemara dismissed just a moment ago, which is whether or not I can combine witness number one with witness number two, considering that between the two of them was two witnesses who said that the Kohen is no good. Rav Ashi says that everyone's in agreement that we're not worried about the degradation of Beis Din, and if Beis Din needs to reverse the decision, they will do so. The Gemara says the only issue over here is whether or not we can combine witness number one with witness number two, considering that they did not come into the Beis Din at the same time. And the Gemara says, and this parallels another machlokus. We see this machlokus at the end of the third parak of Sanhedrin. Detanya, we learned in a brisa. La olamein do some mitzvahs. Now the Rashbam points out over here that there are two machloksim that we're going to be introduced to. The first one of the Chachamim against Rav Yeshua ben Karcha is not relevant to our discussion. But the Rashbam points out that we're going to bring in the Braisa in its entirety, so therefore we are going to learn the first machlokus as well, even though it's not relevant to our discussion. Okay. The only time that ages can combine, in other words, we know that in order to substantiate anything in halacha, I need two witnesses. I also need the two witnesses to see an event. According to the Tanakhama, the only time you can combine the two witnesses is Achi Ushneim Keacha. They must see the event simultaneously. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha Omer, Afilu Bezeacher Zeh. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha says that even if the two witnesses saw it one after another, you could still combine the two witnesses. What does that mean? One after another, Zeacher Zeh. The Rashbam over here explains that one says that he saw on Sunday a loan of $100 from so-and-so to so-and-so, and the other one says, I saw the money being transferred on Monday from so-and-so to so-and-so. So although they did not see the same event occurring, but they're both testifying that Reuven owes Shimon $100. So under those circumstances, that could result in testimony. Again, this is not relevant to our discussion, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the third parak, discusses this in more detail, and when we get there, we'll discuss that also in more detail. So, afilu b'zeacher zeh, ein edusa miskayemes b'beis din, here's the part that we want for our discussion. In terms of, we are now no longer talking about the point of where they see the event, we're talking now about the point where they're testifying about the event. Ein edusa miskayemes b'beis din, ad she'eidu shneim ke'echad. According to the Tanakhama, they must testify together in court. Now, even according to the Tanakhama, it certainly does not mean that they do it jointly and in unison, but it just simply means that they have to be in the court at the same time. Right? And again, when we get to the end of Sanhedrin, we're going to explain this much better. And the Rashbam says, be patient. All this will be explained in the end of the third parak of Sanhedrin. Rabbi Nasan Omer Shomim Dvarav Shozeh Hayom Ulechishiav Chaver Lamachar Shomim Dvarav. And according to Rabbi Nasan, if I have one witness coming and testifying today, and I have another witness coming and testifying tomorrow, that's fine. We can take the two testimonies, we can put them together, even though they didn't come to the court at the same time, and we can be mitzarev. That is the opinion of Rabbi Nasan. And now Rav Ashi says, and that's really the entire machlokus over here regarding our Kohen. One witness says that he was good, followed by two witnesses said that he was no good, followed by one witness who said that he was good. So can I take the two witnesses at the two ends and can I combine them together? The Chachamim will say no. Rabbi Nasan will say yes, just like Rav Elazar and the Rashbag are arguing over that very same point. That, says Rav Ashi, is the entirety of the debate in that Braisa, and the debate is not revolve around the issue of whether or not we're worried about the degradation of Beis Din. Ad Khan. Takes us to the end of that discussion. Where do we stand on all this? So, as to the question of whether or not Beis Din should reverse the ruling, so Rav Nachman clearly is a proponent that they should. Rav Nachman does so because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, at least in one explanation of what we get from Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, is also of the opinion that Beis Din should reverse the ruling. And according to Rav Ashi, it's not even a debate. Everyone says he should reverse the ruling. The debate was centralized around another point, notably whether or not we could take Edom and be Mitzarif, even though they did not testify at the same time. Okay. We're on the very bottom of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, and we start now with another case study. Hahu damal chavri my bais b'hai ara. So a person says to his friend, "What are you doing on my land?" Amalei minach zivante v'hashtara. I bought the land from you, and he holds up a piece of paper and he says, "Here it is." Okay. Not Shakespeare. He says, "Here it is, and here's the document that I in fact bought it from you." So Amar, we're now on the top of Lamed Beis Amud Beis. Here's where this case study gets interesting. So Amar Leish Shtar Zayafahu. So the person says, the other litigant says, "What are you holding up? You're holding up a forged document." They're like, "Well, like, come on, get that out of here." So the first litigant who's holding up the document now bends over Gachin Lachish Leila Rabba, and he whispers the following to Rabba. And he says in Shtar Zayafahu, "You know, the guy's right." he really is a forged document. But let me explain. Miu Shtar Ma'alya Havali V'irkis. I really did have a good document. He really did sell it to me. I lost a good document. V'amina, and I said to myself, Intkid Hai Biadai Kol Dehu. Well, I can't go into Basin empty-handed. I mean, that's ridiculous. I gotta go into something. So I brought in this piece of paper with me, and here it is. Okay. A number of points to go over. Let me first finish the Gemara, and then we'll discuss this with a little bit more detail. So hai bi'ad kol dehu. So v'amina ankid hai bi'ad kol dehu. When I said I got to come in with something in my hand, I'm a rabbi. Okay, so where do we stand on this case? So two opinions. So Rabbi says ma lo l'shaker, ibai amar le shtar ma'alyahu. So Rabbi says, look, we have Mali L'Shaker. Or to put it in other terms that we're normally a little more familiar with, Migu. Meaning that right now he gave an argument, but he could have given another argument. And the other argument that he could have given is, he could have said that Shtar Ma'alyahu. In other words, he could have just simply leaned into the lie and basically said, no, this is a good Shtar. Meaning, did he have to admit to Rabbi that the Shtar was not a good Shtar? He could have leaned into it and he could have said, no, Shtar is good. I know what you're talking about. And the fact that now he's being a little bit more honest than he needs to, so we have now the principle of Migu, and therefore we should believe him. Amale Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, Amai samachta hai, shtara, hai, shtara, chaspa ba'amahu. How can you rely on such a document? The document is a chaspa. It's a shard. It's nothing. It has absolutely no halachic value whatsoever. Okay. So, here's what we know for sure. What we know for sure is that the guy lied. He admitted that he lied. We know that the document was not the original document, as he so claimed. He admitted to Rabbah. And then we have two conflicting viewpoints over here, that of Rabbah and that of Rav Yosef. Rabbah says that we should believe him based on the principle of Migu, and Rav Yosef says, no, we should not. Okay, a couple things to explore over here. One, what document was he actually holding up? So it was some sort of fakery, it was some sort of forgery. So the Rashbam over here writes, starts at the second line down, in Shtar Zayafahu, the admission that it's in fact a forged document, Perish Rach. So the Rashbam quotes Rabbi Nochanano, and he says, Lav Shtar Zayafa Mamish. It was not just simply a total fraudulent counterfeit document. Ela Kamok Shtar Zayafa. Shalom Nichtav Al Mechirazu. This was in fact a actual document, just not for this sale. And what are we talking about? So Shtar Amana. Shtar Amana, we're going to see a number of times throughout the course of this Masechta. Shtar Amana basically is running up a document before the actual sale went through, hoping that the sale will in fact go through. It's called the Shtar Amana because we have to write this on faith. Because what an unscrupulous person would do is that once the document is written up, so then he's going to hold up the document in court and say, hey, the property belongs to me. Look, I already have the documentation. So it has to be written with people who trust one another. Why would you write a document beforehand? Logistic reasons. We want to be ready for the sale. It's gonna, you know, we don't have a lot of time. Whatever. For logistic reasons, it's written up. So what he brought into court, in other words,
signed by witness and all
that. Yeah. Yeah, that's why it's called the Shtar Amana. So what he brought into court is a Shtar Amana, says the Rashbam. Again, quoting the Rach.
Well, we would fast forward this Gemara's current time. somebody brought in a copy of the Star.
All right.
I would better look at it.
I'm unsure. I'm unsure. I don't know. But just, I don't know. Well, my new star, just finishing up in the Rashbam. Well, my new star, mana dehu batel miu. I love the odi betanaisa de tave de star zayafahu. Love kol kamineisha rea edem akir and chasim as yedeim. O mishum hachi amarabba malu the shakar velam star malyahu. Ahavale veirkas. Lema high star love zayafahu. Di ava baila kium and mekayim lay. Now, it does soften this pshat, points out the Rashbam. It does soften the point that, in other words, remember, Rabbah says, well, he has a migu. To a certain degree, again, it's only to a certain degree, in a very limited degree, to a certain degree, it is a good shtar. Again, it just happens to be that the shtar is not for this particular sale. So it's not like he blatantly forged and counterfeited a document. But again, it's only to a very limited degree. Obviously, this shtar was not written for this sale, so when all said and done, it's not going to be a good sale. Anyway, the Rashbam does give another pshat. I'm not going to read it, but you could read on your own. And the Rashbam does offer another pshat that it really is a bona fide forged document. But the Rashbam himself prefers the pshat of the Rach. It kind of softens the lie that he's purporting in the Beis Din. Yeah, agreed. The Rashbam knows it. It softens it just a little bit. Shtar Mana is basically you're writing up a document prior to the sale so that the document is ready for the sale.
And that could be the shtar that you use for the actual Kenyan.
Yeah, correct. Absolutely correct. Right.
And if you don't use it, then.
And if you don't end up using it, so then honest people would tear it up. And dishonest people would you know, take advantage.
Star Mana becomes a regular star at some point.
Yes. Okay. Now, the big issue, which we're going to discuss right now, is the following. Meaning the debate between Rabbah and Rav Yosef. Rabbah says he has a migu, and Rav Yosef says no, he doesn't. Because he had admitted that the shtar is not a good shtar. So basically it calls into the question of, why doesn't he have a migu? Meaning he could have said, dishonest as it is, he could have said, hey, wait one second, the shtar is a good shtar. He could have thundered through with that lie, but he admitted it that it was a lie. But he could have said it, so he has a migu, and that's in fact what Rabbah says. Malu the shakir. And Rav Yosef says, get out of here. So what is really going on over here, the debate between Rabbah and Rav Yosef? So again, let's turn to the Rashbam one more time, and the Rashbam writes. Now the Rashbam over here, it's the Rashbam Divra Mascha Maika Samachta Haishtara. This is Rashbam commenting on Rav Yosef's challenge to Rabbah. Now, the Rashbam points out over here, the person who is holding onto the shtar does not have cheskes gimel shanim. He's not been on the property for 3 years unchallenged. So he doesn't have that going for him. Meaning right now, the only thing that he has going for him is the shtar. And v'hai shtar ches babamahu. V'kevan de ode. And look, and he admitted it. V'lo dam l'shar ma l'shakir shebegemara. Now, the Rashbam goes on to explain, this is not going to be like your typical migu. Why not? Because in your classic migu, at least in theory, both claims could be true. The claim that he's making, and the claim that he could be making. So the actual claim and the latent claim that he could make both potentially could be true, and once we have that, then we're going to say migu. But over here you can't say that, because his latent claim, the one that he could make, we know is just simply wrong, and it's like, says the Rashbam, migu against Edom. We just saw this yesterday. Migu against Edom, who wins? Edom is going to be migu. So, Sharei Kokocha v'cheskasu b'karkazu al yedei haishtaru. Because remember, going back to the first point he made, the entire case is based on, his entire strength is based on the fact that he has documentation. He hasn't been there for 3 years, so his only legitimacy to the land is going to be the document. V'haich nemer ma l'shakar b'shtar zeh. Ibayam ashar malyahu v'alo modish ashar pasol. Look, he now stepped forward and he made the admission And it was, you know, obviously to be commended, he made the admission that was a forged document. I mean, shouldn't have done it to begin with, but he made the admission. V'hodas baldin kamei edim. And over here, his admission is tantamount to testimony. And now, you can't say migu in a position against edim. Now, granted, by the way, this pshat of the Rashbam is interesting because it's not real bona fide edim, it's his admission. But in halacha, an admission is tantamount to edus.
Can you testify against yourself?
Typically, the answer is no. But in monetary law, the answer is yes. That's the principle of hodas baldin kamei edim dami. Okay. On a criminal act, no. On money, yes. Admittedly, by the way, Ben, if we could just explore your question just a little bit more, this kind of falls in between. Because it's a criminal act of forgery. Okay. So v'hodas beitin kamei adam dami v'ilu ba'ushne edim shamrushu pasol like a sumal l'shaker. Look, says the Rashbam, if we had two witnesses come and say that the document is a forged document, so we're not going to say, well, he made one claim, but he could have made another claim. No, he couldn't have. Witnesses said that the document's not good. So if he himself is saying the document is not good, so therefore we don't say migu. So the Rashbam over here introduces to us to a yesod gadol in terms of migu, and that is that when it comes to migu, it only works when the actual claim and the latent claim that he could have made are both at least potentially factual or truthful.
Rabbi must know this also.
Right, yeah, right, correct. Meaning, how could he go against it? Okay, we have a minute. Let's do Tosus over here. Tosus addresses the very same issue that the Rashbam deals with, and he gives a slightly different presentation in terms of what is Rav Yosef's argument against Rabbah. Take a look at the top Tosus on the Amud Alamed Beis Amud Beis. Tosus writes, Amaika Masamachta Haishtara Haishtara Chasbabama Utema Delahemne Bimigu Di Bayama Shtar Mal Yehu. So again, the Tosus is bothered by the same question the Rashbam is, and that is, what happened to the principle of Migu? Vitirates Reba Rabbi Mordechai Delo Armin Migu Lahotzi Mamon. Okay, so Tosus over here attacks this very same issue. We're using a different principle, and that is the following. Migu provides a person credibility, like we say time and again throughout Shas. But it only provides credibility for a person to hold his money. We will not say migu over here for the purpose of extraction. Migu does not create enough credibility to allow me to extract money from you. Now, this pshat is a little bit difficult because right now, currently, he's occupying the land. But the Reis says, but don't get fooled by that. Because, as the Rashbam already told us, but the Reis is going to now corroborate, he hasn't been here for 3 years. So you really can't call him at this point in time the Muchzak. Really, it's the challenger now who is considered the Muchzak. And with the Migu argument, he's trying to extract the land from that person. So, the only time we're going to say Migu is only for a person to hold his money, not for a person to extract money. Okay. Skip a little bit in the Tosfos. Ve'ein nira l'ri midalam efarish time ha'achi be'edjem mashma dalam mishem hacha hava. So the Ri dismisses this pshat of the Ri b'Rabbi Mordechai because the Gemara doesn't say that. Meaning, if really the issue is that we don't say migu to extract money, the Gemara should have just simply said, this is migu lahotzi, we don't say migu lahotzi. V'nira l'ri. So here we go now with our third explanation of Rav Yosef. And by the way, there's more. Just today we'll cap it at three. V'nira l'ri, the time of the Rav Yosef, delar min amigu hacha kevin delayz be'hacha migu. Elim kain, sheker t'chila shehutzrach l'shaker t'chila, v'lomer v'hashtara. So, an interesting shot by the Ri, and that is as follows. If your migu starts with a lie, then we will not say migu. Meaning, migu has to start from a point of neutrality. If your migu has to start with a lie, so then we cannot say migu. And over here, how do we know it's a lie? Because he told us. In other words, he told us that it was a forged document. So once we are starting from the point of sheker, you can't now you can't provide a migul. Now again, by the way, this may cut into, right? Again, you got into yeshiva, you got into shir, so you'll hear a number of times the shirim on migul, and basically the general chakira that said regarding migul is basically, what does that do? Is it give you like super credibility? In other words, you have in general a certain amount of credibility, and migul provides you more credibility, or basically no. In other words, it's just simply a mechanical way of making a claim.
But I mean, inherently, migul cannot be a falsehood, because you're saying that the guy could have said something else that would have put him in a strong position, but he's telling the truth here because he was in a weaker position.
Right.
So it's
over here, this read says that you can't start migul on a lie. So basically, again, now we're just injecting a little bit more into this explanation, meaning that the way he understands migul is that it basically enhances your credibility, but if the starting point of your position is that I need to lie, so then obviously there's no way we can enhance your credibility if you're starting off by saying, you're right, I had to lie. I had to come in with a forged document. But here's what I could have said at that point in time. Now you simply don't have the credibility. So anyway, so where do we stand right now in the Gemara? So again, the Gemara has a case where a person comes into court, admits that the document that he has was a forged document, but explains that, well, look, I had the real document, but I lost it, and I knew I couldn't come into Beis Din empty-handed. Rabbah says, Mali l'shaker, and Rav Yosef says, get out of here. Meaning, no, we're not going to say Mali l'shaker when his entire case is built on that document. He's got nothing else other than the document to make his case. He admitted the document is no good, and therefore we're not going to believe him. And why not? So again, just quickly to recap, the Rashbam says because we only say migul if both statements could be true. Over here, we know that the argument that he's giving and the argument that he could have given is not both true, and therefore we're not going to say migul. And according to Tosfos, he offers two pshatim. One, we don't say migul lahotzi, and that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to extract. Or two, the Rish says we don't say migul when it starts with a lie. Okay.
So what's happening to what Rob is thinking?
Then? Right. That's Danny's question, and that's a strong question.
Could be. I
don't. Right. Right. Okay. I'm with you. I'm meaning, obviously, the Rishonim is spending more time with Rav Yosef, and we'll see why in just a moment. But yeah. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara. So a person says to his friend, give me 100 zuz that you owe me. Okay, like enough already, like pay me up. The hashtara, and he says, and oh, by the way, documentation, sure, here it is. So Amalei Shar Zayafahu, so in this very seemingly related case that we have to the previous case, so the borrower says, what are you bringing me? That's not the real document. That's a forgery. So Gachin Lachish LeRabba. So in this related case, so again, very similar. He turns to Rabbi, whispers to Rabbi, In Shari Zayafa. Yeah, he's right. It's really a forged document. Miu Shari Ma'alya Havaliva Irkis. I had the real Shari. I lost it. So I again Vamina Inkid Haibiade Koldahu. I had to hold something in my hand. I couldn't come into court empty-handed. So I'm a Rabba Malul Shakir. So again, Rabba is going to be consistent with what he said previously. In other words, why would he lie? Ibai Amar Le Shtar Malyahu. He should have said that this is just simply a good shtar. And he didn't say that. And so, in other words, he has a migu. And Amar Le Rav Yosef, Amai Kasamachta Haishtara, Haishtar Chas Babamo. And again, Rav Yosef is also consistent. And that is, he admitted that the shtar is no good. So we're not going to say migu over here. Okay, so where do we stand right now? Machlok is between Rabban and Rav Yosef two times over. One in the case of land and the other case of money. Amar of Idi Barav and Hilchasa Kavase de Rabba Be'ara. Vilchasa Kavase de Rav Yosef Bezuze. So Rav Idi Baravin says, well, look, in the case of land, I'm going to be signing with Rabba. In the case of the money, I'm going to be signing with Rav Yosef. Hilchasa Kavase, Hilchasa Karaba Be'ara Dehecha de Kaima Ara Tekom. Vilchasa Kavase de Rav Yosef And for basically the same reason. And that is, and the Rashma says it really succinctly, well, look, in the case of the money, who's holding the money right now? The borrower is holding the money. And right now somebody's coming at him with a document, admitted document's a forged document. So basically, what is he now trying to do? Extract money from somebody else. You're trying to take money from somebody else, so you need documentation. And you admitted that the document is simply no good. So, a chazakah. And in the case of the land, so what are we trying to do over there? We're trying to do over there is take the land away from the person who currently is occupying it. But remember, as the Rashbam reminds us, the person who's currently occupying it over here has really no leg to stand on. He doesn't have a document. He hasn't been there for 3 years. So really, in that case, in the case of the land, who's considered the muchzak? The challenger is really considered the muchzak, because the person who currently occupying it right now has no halachic basis for his occupation. Not cheses kimel shanim, not document. So who the muchzak is over there is really the challenger. So therefore, in that case, Rav Yehuda bar Avin says, I'm going to award the challenger the land, like Rabbah says. So the Gemara says, basically, what we're going to do over there is we're going to have a split decision. Now, the Rashbam over here points out, last Rashbam of the day, the Rashbam points out over here, that is a little bit unusual.
It's not split if you follow the old Mechuzak argument.
Yes, right, that's correct. Right.
But is it the other way around? Ravidi holds that the land is not transferred.
He is going...
He agrees with Rabbah in the case of the land.
Let's read the Rashbam. So Behilchza Kavasa de Rabba Bar, Bosa Din Rishon de La Mustafkala the Ravidi Bar Avin, Tam Shalmi Mishnaim Nira, Yoser Hilkach Bosikh Rishon Karaba, Damina Malala Shakar, Viyamod A Mecho. In other words, I'm sorry, you're right. You're right, David. In other words, in the case of the land, he's gonna side with the sale, meaning the sale being a final sale. The Kevin de Lo, Itbaru Tamem Sharaba Virav Yosef, meaning both of them offered arguments, and the Rashbam writes, and we don't really know whose argument to favor. And in terms of the money, we're going to say to the Baal Hashtar, look, he's holding the money right now. You're holding a document which you admit is forged. I'm sorry, David, you're absolutely right. That in the case of the land, so the occupier gets to keep it. In the case of the money, the holder of the money gets to keep it. And the Rashbam says, and this is in fact the conclusion. Now, it is true that later on we are going to rule, much later on in the Masechta, we're going to rule like Rav Yosef, Mechlad de Bekuli Gemara Halacha Karaba, Veloka Rav Yosef, meaning, and in that one unique scenario, we're going to be ruling like Rav Yosef, which means that generally speaking, we go like Rabba, Hacha Paskin Halacha Karav Yosef, Lokasha, the Hach Bahach Plukta Nami Paskin Karaba. So the, in other words, in this particular case also, we'll be signing like Rabba, but in this particular issue, we're going to go with the principles of Chazaka. Okay, let's quickly recap for today. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow, we'll pick it up with the next case study. So, where do we stand today? The big topic of today has been the overturning of a ruling of Beis Din. Should Beis Din overturn a ruling? So Rav Nachman said, yeah. And even though there is a consideration of what the Gemara describes as zilus de Beis Din, we are worried about the degradation of Beis Din as they flip-flop from one decision to the next decision and the reversing. But the Gemara says, look, if we have new information, we have to go with the new information and provide it. And so therefore, Beis Din will reverse a ruling. Seemingly, Rav Shimon Gamliel agrees with that position. And even though we did offer a couple of pshatim, but one pshat we offered is that according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, he agrees with that position that a basin should reverse the ruling when presented with new information. And then the next thing we discussed today was where a person comes into court with a document, then challenged about the authenticity of the document, whispered to the Beis Din, which, by the way, just as a parenthetical note, like you can do that in court, meaning you can, like, you know, I know, and you know, you can, you know, you could do that, but approach the bench. I don't know halacha, you could do that as well. Apparently, you can, but okay. Anyway, but admitted that the document was a forged document, and a debate between Rabbah and Rav Yosef whether or not he has a migu or he doesn't have a migu. Rabbah says he has a migu, Rav Yosef says he does not have a migu, and we spent a lot of time this morning exploring the position of Rav Yosef. Why doesn't he have a migu? How come this doesn't doesn't fall under the regular categories of migu. We offered a pshat in the Rashbam. We offered two pshatim in Tosfos in terms of why he does not have a migu. And then we concluded today with since there's a machlokes in Rabban and Rav Yosef, and since it's indeterminate which of their positions is to be taken, so therefore in terms of halacha, we will work with the muchzak, whoever is currently holding the either the property or the money.